Lord Sri Krishna, thus thinking to himself, established Maharaj Yudhishthira in the position of the supreme control of the world in order to show the ideal of administration on the path of piety. So we don't have purport on that verse. I will read the next. Roman vielleicht willst du die Deutsch Bhagavatam nehmen? Wir haben eine sehr schöne Erläuterung. So the next verse. Uttarayam drita puror vamsha sattva bimanyunam savai drauni astra samplusta punar bhagavata drita. Translation. The embryo of Puhu's descendant, begotten by the great hero Abhimanyu in the womb of Uttara, his wife, was burnt by the weapon of the son of Drona. But later, he was again protected by the Lord. Who is this embryo in the womb of Parikshit Maharaja? And so the verse explained that this Parikshit Maharaj in the womb of Uttara had actually been begotten by Abhimanyu, was a great hero, and he had been attacked by the son of Drona, who was the son of Drona? Ashwatthama? Yeah. And so Ashwatthama, who I think we all have heard these pastimes many times, had been sending a Brahmastra to kill Maharaj Parikshit, and the Lord protected Maharaj Parikshit in the womb of Uttara. So purport. The embryonic body of Parikshit, which was in formation after Uttara's pregnancy by Abhimanyu, the great hero, was burnt by the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama. But the second body was given by the Lord within the womb, and thus the descendant of Puhu was saved. This incident is the direct proof that the body and the living entity, the spiritual spark, are different. When the living entity takes shelter in the womb of a woman through the injection of the semen of a man, there is an emulsification of the man's and woman's discharges, and thus a body is formed the size of a pea, gradually developing into a complete body. But if the developing embryo is destroyed in some way or other, the living entity has to take shelter in another body or in the womb of another woman. The particular living entity who was selected to be the descendant of Maharaj Puru or the Pandavas was not an ordinary living entity, and by the superior will of the Lord, he was destined to be the successor to Maharaj Yudhishthira. Therefore, when Ashwatthama destroyed the embryo of Maharaj Parikshit, the Lord, by his own internal potency, entered into the womb of Uttara, and his plenary portion, just to give audience to the would-be Maharaj Parikshit, who was in great danger. By his appearance within the womb, the Lord encouraged the child and gave him complete protection in a new body by his omnipotency. By his power of omnipresence, he was present both inside and outside of Uttara and other members of the Pandava family. So I read again the second verse. The embryo of Puhu's descendant, begotten by the great hero Abhimanyu in the womb of Uttara, his wife, was burnt by the weapon of the son of Drona. But later, he was again protected by the Lord. I think think the sound system for the kitchen is not working, but if you connect the radio thing, then she can, Aditi can hear with the radio. I think maybe even there is, you need a cable nail man. Maybe there is one in the back. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Minitam Yena Tasmei Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svaparantikam E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Vamsakalpatarubhyasya, Kripa Sindhubhya Eva Cha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So here Uddhava is still speaking to Vidura, explaining about Lord Krishna's pastimes out of Vrindavan. And today we hear about the famous pastimes of Ashwatthama trying to kill the descendant of the Pandavas in the womb of Uddhava. Brauchst du eine deutsche Übersetzung, Roman? Oder möchtest du wissen? Ja, okay. Can anyone? You can do something, Krishna Karuna? Ja, ja, just that he can understand the main meaning. And maybe, if possible, Leo and Hans, come a little closer. I said you are too far. So one point that Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport is that actually the proof that Krishna, the body of Maharaj Parikshit was actually killed by the weapon of Ashwatthama. But Krishna provided another body for Maharaj Parikshit. The baby body of Maharaj Parikshit had been burned by the weapon, and Krishna gave another body to Maharaj Parikshit. And Srila Prabhupada mentioned that this actually makes the proof of the difference between the soul and the body. So I thought, there is another nice point that I found in the purport, is that Srila Prabhupada explained that Maharaj Parikshit was not an ordinary person, and therefore he had been protected. Maharaj Parikshit had a very special task, very special mission to accomplish, and therefore he was very dear to Lord Krishna and was protected by Lord Krishna. We see also that because of the loving exchanges between the devotees and the Lord, because the Lord developed this loving propensity to his devotees, it's another reason why the Lord is protecting the devotees. Like two reasons. One reason, because the devotees has a special mission to accomplish, and the other reason is because the devotees are actually very dear to Krishna. That's the reason why Krishna provides the protection. So we are maybe not like Maharaj Parikshit, but we also have a mission. And we are not maybe as great devotees as Maharaj Parikshit, but already a loving relationship between the Lord and ourselves is growing, is established, is present. Maybe to a small extent, but something is there. So we are somehow also deserving this protection of the Lord. Very nice how Prabhupada mentioned also in the purport that the Lord, how is it written? Krishna encouraged the child in the womb, Maharaj Parikshit, and gave complete protection. So it's not that he just came and protected the boy, but he was giving support to the child. He was actually encouraging Maharaj Parikshit. Hold on, hold on. Everything will be okay. I will be there. I will protect you. That shows how the Lord is personal with his devotee. He's not just coming and, okay, I have to protect my devotees. I come and protect them. No, he has this mood of support. He has this mood of encouragement. Don't worry. I'm here next to you. I will protect you. I'm there. I found very, very beautiful. We also, in the life of the devotees, we are all time to time going through difficult times, through obstacles, through purifications. Sometimes we meet devotees in festivals. You ask, how are you, Prabhu? I'm struggling. I'm surviving. So many times we hear that actually the devotees, the life of a devotee is not always easy. We have to go through purifications. And actually, it's very beautiful in our moment of struggles, in our moment of purification, when we feel the encouragements of the Lord, when we feel the encouragements of Krishna, when we feel Krishna is there as a person and wants to, He wants to give us the strength to go over those obstacles. He wants to give us protection. Before the festival of Janmashtami came, for almost 2 weeks we were in a big marathon here in Goloka Dham, cleaning, arranging, building, doing so many things. And then Janmashtami came, and for me it was really a big surrender act to do all the services I had to do. And on Janmashtami day, Satchinandana Swami was supposed to go on the altar for the oil abhishek. And very late in the evening, Maharaj told me, I had a phone call with Maharaj, and Maharaj said, tell the Damodar Priya I cannot come tomorrow. I am just too tired from the tour, and tell her. So I did not sleep much in that night, but I had to be there for Mangalarati to make sure the right singer will sing and everything will be alright. So I went to Damodar Priya and I said, Maharaj cannot come for the oil abhishek. And she said, can you come yourself on his behalf? And I said, oh yeah, sure, of course I can come. And suddenly I was on the altar bathing the Lord, and it was just such a sweet abhishek. It was just such an amazing moment. And as I was there on the altar serving the Lord, I just felt how merciful he is, how encouraging he is toward me. Although I'm struggling and I'm really trying my best, but now he was saying, come close to me and serve me personally. And my heart was really melting while doing this abhishek. I was feeling the Lord is caring for me. The Lord wants to give me the strength. The Lord wants to support me in my attempt. And although I was very tired after that, I was just so enlivened. I just said, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. My mind was just fixed. It was actually every dust of Tamagun was just totally away. And it was a very nice experience to see how the Lord is providing this protection, how the Lord is actually encouraging the devotees. And we should actually in our life be very receptive to those moments the Lord is giving us signs, to those moments the Lord is encouraging us. Very often He will encourage us through other devotees. He will encourage us through the spiritual master, and sometimes in a direct way by arranging our life that we see, oh, He is so merciful toward us. Once a devotee told me that those moments the Lord is providing His protection or encouraging us, we should take those moments and string them like a flower garland, and all the time keep this flower garland around our head, meaning that we should all the time remember how the Lord was merciful to us, how the Lord is ready to encourage us and protect us against our obstacles. Very often we forget that and we take everything for granted, and we feel, oh, I have no reciprocation in my life. I'm just struggling, and Krishna, where is Krishna? No signs from Krishna. But very often signs are there, but we just tend to forget them. And it's very nice sometimes to write them in a notebook and to, I would say, regularly remember those moments of grace. So I will speak a little bit on this point that Prabhupada mentioned in the purport of the proof. By giving a new body to Maharaj Parikshit, it was like a proof that the body and the soul are different. And I know that we have heard thousands of lectures explaining that we are actually different than body and mind. But how much did we realize that? How much are we acting as souls? How much are we aware of being souls inside of this material body during the day? When I look for myself, I think I should hear much more about that to help me to come to this understanding or this realization that the soul is different than the body. I have just two quotes I would like to read to you on that principle. The first one is from 11th Canto, chapter 22, verse 41. An unintelligent mind, failing to distinguish himself from material nature, thinks nature to be real. By contact with it, he becomes completely bewildered and enters the cycle of material existence. So here, a person who is unable to distinguish himself from material nature is considered to be unintelligent. And then he thinks this material nature to be real, and by the contact with this material nature he become bewildered and enter the cycle of birth and death. So some times ago Bhakta Mikhail was reminding me about a quote from Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, who was saying that this identification of ourself to the body is like an anchor. Like when the boat wants to stay in a place, he put this heavy anchor into the sea so that the boat cannot move away. So this attachment of ourself to the material body is like the anchor that do not allow us to progress much in devotional life. So how do we act with that? How should we proceed to realize this point that we are not the body and the mind? I have another quote, very nice quote. It's Narada Muni speaking. is speaking to Maharaj Chitraketu and tells him how he should proceed to realize he is not the body. Therefore, O King Chitraketu, carefully consider the position of the Atma. Try to understand who you are, whether body, mind or soul. Consider where you have come from, where you are going after giving up this body, and why you are under the control of material lamentation. Try to understand, carefully try to understand your real position in this way. And then you will be able to give up your unnecessary attachments. You will also be able to give up the belief that this material world is eternal. Thus, you will obtain peace. So here, Narada Muni, we remember the story of King Chitraketu, who had lost his child. He wanted so much to have a descendant, to have a child, and then the child died, and he was in such lamentations. So here, Narada Muni tells him that because of this attachment of yourself to be the body and the mind, you are lamenting, you think that this soul was your child. And few times in this quote, Narada Muni said, carefully, very carefully, introspect yourself. Ask yourself the question, who I am, from where I'm coming, and where am I going? So we know that in our tradition we have what we call the Buddha Shuddhi meditation. We have some particular meditation that help us to realize we are the soul, that we are not the body. And this also, Srila Prabhupada used the intelligent way to make us understand that we are not the body. Srila Prabhupada said, when we see our hand, we don't say I the hand, we say this is my hand, this belongs to me. This is not I, this is mine. So therefore, this shows who is the I. The I is the real self. The I is the soul inside of the body. And what is the force that attached us to the material mind and body is the upadis, is the identification of whom we think we are. The identification of being a man, of being a woman, of being a king, or a worker, or a brahmana, all those identification, this is the bondage, this is the what keeps the soul attached to the identification of the body. And there is very, very nice example of King Prataparudra. I often like to mention this example because it's very, very powerful. The identification of a king, it's something very strong. King means Aishwarya Bhav. King means almost the supreme controller. The king has almost the position of God toward the citizens. So it's a very strong and very hard identification. But on the day of Ratha Yatra, King Prataparudra take a broom and start to clean the road before the chariot of Lord Jagannath. Now in India, to take a broom and clean dust, it's really for the lowest of the caste. No one wants to do that. Even if they have to make a hole in the wall of the house, they will call a lower caste to come and just take the dust of that hole. Everyone just do not want to give up their ego of being someone important. And the king, who is in the highest type of identification, is now taking the role of a menial servant. He's giving up totally the identification. I am someone great. I am someone important. And he's doing the lowest of service for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath. This is very, very beautiful example of giving up the upadhi. And we see also sometimes when we are asked to do services which are also from the lowest kind, not just helping or cleaning, sometimes our ego also revolts. Oh, I would like to do something else. This is not good enough for me. This is this identification. I am someone important. I am someone great. And this is actually what is binding us to the material body. This identification that we are great. And if we follow further the question that Narada Muni is asking to Maharaj Chitraketu, who are you? Contemplate, who is I? Who are you? So we have a general answer. We are part and parcels of Lord Krishna. Shri Radha Madan Mohan Ki Jai. We are part and parcels of Krishna. We are eternal. But the strongest identity, or the strongest way to help us in our connection to our eternal identity, is I am a servant. This is our best way to connect with our true self, to come back into this position of being a servant. Once a devotee told me, when I remember in my mind I'm just a servant, it's as powerful as a mantra. When I remember I am just eternal servant, everything just becomes blissful. Just everything becomes easy. I remember usually I always travel in saffron clothes when we will travel with Sachinandana Swami. And once I was in airport in Berlin. It was early morning and I was going to the toilet. I was crossing the main hall of the airport and I just felt many were looking at me. And I felt a little uncomfortable. And then I just remember, anyway, I'm just a servant of everyone. And all this ego, because that's the ego, what others think of me, how do I appear, and it's just the ego, just the identification to the body. And just remembering, actually, I'm just a servant. And then everything just fell down. Everything just fell down. And I was just totally free from this ego. So this coming back to our real identity of being humble servant, this is actually the best way to detach ourselves from mind and body. And we see also the attachment to the identification to the mind is so strong that the reason why it's so difficult to change japa. Because as long as we identify the thoughts to be us, we have no chance to control the mind. But only when we are separated and we understand those thoughts are not me, I don't want to follow them, then we get a chance to control the mind. Sometimes I like very much to, when I chant japa, to have the voice of the mantra louder than the voice of the mind. That means the mantra comes in the foreground and the voice of the mind is in the background and is weaker than the voice of the mantra, because most of the time is the opposite. There is the voice of the Maha Mantra which is somewhere in the background and the mind is louder and the mind is just speaking, telling us this and telling us that and the thoughts and everything. And it's very, very nice exercise to try to reverse and to have the voice of the mind very soft in the background and the voice of the mantra, the sound of the mantra louder. So that means we need to disidentify with this voice of the mind. We should not just follow all those thoughts that come, but understand I'm different from that. I don't want to enter into that. Like if you have a person who is totally mentally disturbed and wants to speak to you and tell you many things, you just feel it's not going to go anywhere. I want to take my distance from that, because it's not no reasoning behind it. So in the same way, the mind is just bringing thoughts one after another, one after another, one after another. All those things are coming, and many times it just don't make sense. It's like the jump of the monkey. And therefore we need to learn to disidentify from the thoughts, so that we can actually properly chant and increase the voice of the mantra. I found a quote from Devamrita Swami where he said that when we are nicely engaged in serving Krishna, we will forget that we are the body. And when we are nicely engaged in satisfying our senses, we will forget Krishna. So when we are nicely engaged in service, we forget we are the body. And we are nicely engaged in sense gratification, we forget Krishna. So therefore, it's very important that we are actually nicely and sufficiently engaged in service. Because this save above, this service attitude, is our chance to forget our bodily identification. And service, according to Rupa Goswami, has two qualities. Devotional service has two qualities. It should be uninterrupted, like no interruptions into the service. That means a sufficient amount of service. And the other one is it should be unmotivated. And very often we see we are doing service, but we are all the time there thinking, what is there for me? We are all the time seeing, how can this service bring us something for ourselves? And it's very important that more and more, as we progress in devotional service, we learn this art to come into this selfless part of just giving pleasure to Krishna and not so much wanting something on for ourselves. And our subtle body is just so much rooted in this concept, what is there for me? And we can see, for example, when there are queue and we need to wait, just because it's not comfortable, everyone is just thinking, how can I go faster? Sometimes in the airport you have few different queues. And people just move from one queue to the other. Maybe this one is faster, this one is faster. The mind is just there. Or if you are in India and you are waiting for a ticket train and you see that they just cannot wait. They just pass the full line and go to the counter and try to pass front of the first one which is on the line. You can see this whenever there is uncomfortable situation. Immediately the ego is rebelling and what is there for me? Why should I wait? And immediately we want to be in front, we want to avoid all those type of difficulties. This is this very deeply rooted pattern or deeply rooted action of the false ego. What is there for me? I want to be the first. I want to have the best. I want to have the maha. I want this. I want that. And this is totally at the opposite of servant. And this is what is actually rooting us to the false ego, to the body, to the mind. At the opposition of being freed from this identification through the way of service. So how do we train to become a servant? What is our training school to become a servant of Krishna? Krishna is on the altar. How can we serve him? Many of us cannot go on the altar and serve him directly. Yeah. Our training to serve Krishna is by serving the Vaishnavas. This is our training to Krishna. And this is what is one of the essence of Krishna consciousness. Because by serving of the Vaishnavas, we get blessings. And by those blessings, we are actually coming closer. And we can just introspect ourselves. How much are we in this Seva Bhav? How much every day are we thinking, I will serve this devotee or that devotee? How much are we thinking, what is this devotee wanting? Or what this devotee need so that I can give a good service to him? And then we can actually evaluate our stage in devotional service in connection to how much do I want to serve. This is the essence of Krishna consciousness, devotional service. This is the essence. So I would like to end with a last point, this point of protection, by telling you very shortly the story of Ladini Mataji. Maybe some of you have heard already her story. She was a very special soul in a Mataji body. It was a Mataji from America. She was living in New Vrindavan, and the conditions in New Vrindavan were very austere. They had just ice cold water to take their shower in the morning. They just had enough food to eat potatoes and rice, and everything was very, very austere. And Ladini Mataji was worshipping Jagannath deities. And whenever a guest or a person will come to the temple, she will just stop all activities she was doing. And she will just run to that person and she will say, "You are a guest of Jagannath. How can I serve you?" She could see everyone who would come to the temple as personal guests of the deities. And she would just welcome and take care of any person who would come to the temple like a personal guest of Jagannath. And one day, Ladini Mataji had a dream. And in the dream, Lord Nityananda came and said, actually, at that time, she was starting to read very intensely Chaitanya Charitamrita. And as she was reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, she had a dream from Nityananda Prabhu. And he came to her and he said, "You have to go out. Go out and start Sankirtan. You start to distribute our glories to everyone. You start to distribute books." So Ladini Mataji found one or two other Mataji. They made a Sankirtan party and went out distributing books. But when she was on book distribution, she would have dreams of Lord Baladev coming and say, "Come back! Come back to New Vrindavan! We are missing you! We want you to come back!" So Ladini Mataji came back, and then Nityananda Prabhu will come back in dream. "Go out, go out." So she was in total dilemma. She was writing to Radhanath Maharaj, "What should I do? Should I listen to Baladev or should I listen to Nityananda? Should I go out? Should I stay in? What should I do?" And Radhanath Swami comments, he said, "We are all the time in dilemma. How will I control my mind? How will I do this? How will I do that?" But Ladini was in dilemma. Should I follow the orders of Nityananda or follow the orders of Balaram? That was her dilemma. There was one instance where they were distributing books. They had a book table and then the police came and say, you stop that. Stop your kirtan. You take everything away, otherwise we arrest you." And Ladini Mataji came in front. There was one sannyasi there who said, okay, we will go. And Ladini came and said, "We are not going to move. We will stay here. This is the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We are following the orders of God." this is higher than the law of the state. We will not move. So the policemen say, okay, we arrest you now. We take you in the police station. And Ladini said, if you want to arrest us, you have first to arrest them. And she showed the deity of Gonitai. And the policeman was, huh? And Ladini said, they are the responsible. They give us the order to be here. So they should be arrested first. And the policemen just did not know what to do. So they arrested the devotees and they arrested the deities also. They took the deities also. And then there was a court case. And in the court case, the sannyasi was there. And the sannyasi told the judge, we will never do it again. We will not do it again. And Ladini stood up and said, yes, we will do it again. We will do it again. This is their order. And finally, the judge, it was too much for the judge. He just let them go free and did not do anything. She was a very, very strong personality. And at the end of her life, she was actually preaching in Africa. She was doing kirtan. She was spreading the holy names. Thousands of people will follow her. Thousands of people will become Krishna conscious by her amazing faith and amazing relationship with Krishna. But then the civil war started in this part of Africa, and everyone started to kill each other there. And then an order was given that all American people should leave this place of Africa immediately. And she was very sick also. Her body was really like she had some type of malaria or some. She was really, really sick at that time. And she was writing to Radhanath Swami. People were just killing themselves, each other, outside. It was just the big war. And she was writing to Radhanath Swami, have no fear of death. My only fear is that I may offend Vaishnava. This is my only fear. And then the order was given that everyone has to leave the country. But she did not want. She just stayed in Africa and continue preaching and continue serving the devotees. And one devotee knew one of the chief of the people of the army people. And the devotees wrote to that chief. He said, forget all about this war. Stop that. You have bad association. Stop this bad association. And this commander became very angry and came to the temple and decided to kill all the devotees. So they came there with pistols and they say, we will kill all the men and the woman can go away. But Ladini Mataji said, no, you are not going to kill anyone. If you want to kill any man, you should kill me first. And she could have life saved, but she just said, no, I cannot allow any devotee to be killed. If you want to kill anyone, you have to kill myself first. And they just shoot at her, and she was the first one to leave her body. And Radhanath Swami comment on that. He said, did Krishna not protect his devotees? How is it that this happened in that way? And then Radhanath Swami explained that actually her body was gone, but Krishna protected her soul. Krishna protected her bhakti. Krishna protected that in her eyes she could actually not offend any devotees. Because in her eyes it would be offending a devotee to allow them to be killed in front of her eyes. She just could not tolerate that. So when we speak about protection of the Lord, it's not only protection of the body, but the protection is protection against our six enemies that we are in our heart. protection against offending other devotees, protection of our bhakti lata plant inside of our heart. So it's very important in our life to pray, to be protected against those bad tendencies inside of our heart. Once Srila Prabhupada was in Mayapur, front of Panchatattva with folded hands, and he was speaking to the deities. And one devotee came, one old lady, and she said, What are you saying? What are you praying? And Prabhupada said, I pray that I will always be protected against Maya. Prabhupada was saying that. So how much ourselves should we pray to Krishna to be actually protected for this small and fragile plant of devotion that is growing in our heart can be fully protected and can actually grow. And beautifully we hear today in the purport of Prabhupada said that the Lord came to protect this devotee because this devotee had a mission, had a great mission. And all of us, we are like Maharaj Parikshit. All of us, we have a very great mission. All of us, we are chosen by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to spread the Sankirtan movement. All of us, we are chosen to help the entire world to become Krishna conscious, to become happy. Therefore, in the eyes of the Lord, we are very dear. We are very, very important. We have very strong mission. And the Lord is always there to provide protection to us. And not only that He come to give protection, but He is coming to give encouragement, support and encouragement to His devotees. And many times He is coming to us, giving us this encouragement and support. And those moments are very important. We should keep them with us. Also today I spoke a little bit about this need of disidentifying from body and mind, and this is only possible by taking the path of service. This giving up of our upadis, thinking we are someone important, but just become a menial servant and do this service continually, all the time, steadily, and to do it with more and more with the mood of selflessness, of doing that for the pleasure of Krishna. And then automatically this identification to the body become destroyed, become dissolved. So I'm sorry, I did a little long my lecture today. So I will stop here. I don't know if you have questions or comments on Daleshwari. Thank you. I think this principle of the mercy of the Lord and our own endeavor is functions in any field of devotional service. In everything we do in our spiritual life, those two are there. And definitely, just to enter into this real service attitude, to get this seva bhav, to get this desire to please Krishna, to please the devotees, this is already a good amount of mercy. It's difficult to do it just on our own. So also in that case of becoming aware of our true identity, to be in that seva bhav, we can try ourselves. Okay, here are so many devotees. I want to try to serve that devotee and that devotee. What do they need? How can I please them? You can do that on your own, but you also need very much the mercy, so that you can do it, because the ego is so strong. And we see after so many years of practice how difficult it is to disidentify from the body and mind. It's not an easy thing, like chanting attentively our japa. It's not an easy thing. So we can endeavor, we can try, but we need also the path of blessing. But sometimes also in our japa we see we are not endeavoring so much. We are not doing also our part. And Madhavananda was speaking about two types of sadhakas. And he was speaking about one type of sadhaka who is doing his practices but don't mind if it's going well or not. He's not really endeavoring. He's doing them because he knows I have to do them. But the higher type of sadhaka is doing his sadhana, but he's endeavoring. He's trying. He's calling. He's begging. He's doing all he can so that he can connect with Krishna. So both need to be there, our endeavor and the blessings. But when we are, it's interesting, because when we enter the road of seva bhav, of service attitude, then the blessings are just like raining, like monsoon. Because when you do service, you are pleasing. It's instant. When you want to do service, you are immediately pleasing. So the blessings are very, very much connected there. You get them, they get them almost instantly. Anyone? Any other? Okay, so then we'll stop here. Our temple room is becoming emptier and emptier every day. I think today also a few devotees will leave, and we are very happy that you came to Goloka Dham. Very grateful for all the services you did. Please consider this place like your house and your temple, and you are always most welcome to come under the shelter. They are there for all of us. They are there for everyone. They just love to see many devotees. They just love to have kirtan, to have lecture. That's really a very beautiful way to please them. Garantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.